Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tay. Doing good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. It's hot, sweaty, but otherwise all right.
Well, that's true. It's hot, though, and dry, so that's good for our outdoor theater season that we're just about ready to wrap up. This weekend and one more, and we're done.
You've moved on to your next show, correct?
Correct. We're on the second show now. Yeah, the changeover last weekend just about killed me, but I've survived, and I'm in recovery mode now.
What are you doing? I know Seussical is the pre-show, and then Descendants is the main show, right?
Correct. And I would not even know what Descendants was if it wasn't for Charlie and Cooper.
I associate with it like that very serious, there was like a very serious Academy Award type of movie that came out a few years ago called The Descendants. Also, there's a punk band. It's neither of these, correct?
Right, yeah. George Clooney was in that movie.
Okay.
But
not,
no, this
not
is,
in your play.
No, that's not. This is some type of a Disney type thing where they basically created the next generation of all the fairy tale characters, and some are good and some are bad, depending on what their parents were, you know, like Maleficent and Jafar and the evil queen that gave Snow White the apple and all that. So they're evil kids, and then you got the good kids of like Belle and the Beast, and Cruella DeVille's son is one of the evil ones too. And you've got, you know, a few different ones like that are in there. The fairy godmother, her daughter's in it. So, well, there.
How many more weekends do you have of that?
We got this weekend and next weekend. So we finish up on July 3rd is the last one. We're doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights each weekend.
All right. So we're recording. By the time you hear this, you'll still have a whole weekend out of you to see it, I guess.
That's right.
If you live in the tri-state area, there you go.
Yeah, if you live in the tri-state area, or if you're just looking for somewhere to go. Yeah, drive here from New York just so you can see the show.
Hey, I don't know. What's your life? Well, that's cool. Well, as I say, like, as we always do, as I've started the habit of the past few weeks, I ask, have you had anything good to drink this week? But I feel like it's another week where you've been very busy, so...
I have been. The only thing that's really been good to me is that Iraq, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to get another bottle of it because
awesome.
It's just such a nice, easy drink. You come home late after being at the theater till late, and you just want something to relax, and I can just pour two or three small glasses of that in there, you know, and cut it with the water, like a third of the Iraq and two-thirds water, and just sip on that. And I just am ready to curl up and go to bed after two or three of them. It's just very relaxing.
I love that you're enjoying that. That's great. And then I guess you are. I know that so many people have strong feelings about like black licorice and stuff. But I know you're a fan of the. You're
oh
a fan
yeah,
of the black jelly bean. Correct.
I love the black. I would say everybody say I don't like the black ones. I say give me the black ones. I love the black jelly beans.
Well,
and I used
that
to
makes
eat.
Sense.
Yeah, I'd get the black licorice. There was a store when I was a kid, there was a store that sold all the penny and nickel candy, and they had the black licorice and the, I guess, cherry licorice or whatever, the red licorice, and I always got the black licorice. The only drawback was your teeth and tongue being black after you ate it, you know?
Cool.
Well, I guess, but, you know, as you get older, that's not so cool when it looks like your teeth are blacked out.
Well, then there's the benefit to Iraq or Ouzo. You get all the flavor of black licorice without it, your tongue or teeth died.
Yeah, plus a little kick.
Yeah, oh,
that's nice too.
Like to sleep. Yeah.
It warms the cockles of my heart.
Well, I was inspired from our last week's episode about celebrity buy-ins and all that stuff. And I've found my liquor store always has the 19 Crime stuff. So actually, currently, I'm drinking the. So we talked about the Snoop Dogg has his Cali Red, which is has good ratings. It's a it's a well thought of red wine,
right?
But I did not know that the same brand, and it makes sense, also has a Martha Stewart Chardonnay.
Yeah.
So I got the Snoop Dogg Cali Red that I'm saving, but I tapped into my Martha Stewart 19 Crime Chardonnay. It's pretty good, and it was like a $10 bottle. So
wow,
I'm not upset. It's a nice like flavorful Chardonnay, nice and buttery. Her face is on the cork, like in. It's I love that I have a cork with Martha Stewart's face on it. So yeah, that's been the only thing I've had that's exciting.
So Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg hanging out at the winery and rolling doobies together, I would say.
They're buds. I think that's been proven, right?
Buds, yeah.
Yeah, buds and buds. And they both make good wine, so.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, if you're looking for a cheap bottle for your summer cookout, I recommend both. Cali Red or the Chardonnay. Speaking of cookout drinks or summer drinks, you know, one of my favorite episodes from last year, we talked about the very weird summer drink of last year. Do you remember what it was, Dad?
Yeah, it was the coffee espresso, wasn't it?
Espresso martini, yes.
Espresso martini, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a weird choice, right? Like, I was kind of into it, though. I mean, I felt like it made sense for the times. Like, we're still in a pandemic. Up is down, left is right. So, like, you know, having a drink that is coffee and sugar and dessert and breakfast and alcohol all at the same kind of made sense.
Oh, it was great, too. It tastes like chocolate, and there's no chocolate in it.
No. Yeah, a good espresso martini. I mean, it definitely... It was weird to me because it was a drink that in, I feel like, eras of bartending past sort of got the side eye. Like, it wasn't respected as a drink. Mm-hmm. But I loved that it came back, and it came back with a vengeance. And so many bars in my area and just New York in general and clearly the country were making really cool versions of espresso martinis.
Yeah, I had one at a bar around here not too long after we did that episode. And they did a really good one, too. Makes you a wide awake drunk.
No, I'm a fan. There's nothing wrong with a good espresso martini. But we have a new drink, apparently, of the summer this year. And this one maybe was a little bit more out of left field for me, because it's not really the espresso martini has, like, an origin point. It has a history to it. This is kind of a newer thing. But, you know, it's had articles written about it. This year, New York Times, Forbes, Southern Living wrote about it, and they all declare this as just the inevitable drink of the summer, and that is the Dirty Shirley.
Dirty Shirley?
Have you ever heard of that, or had it, or encountered
it? No. It sounds like a porn movie, though.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, all right. So we're going to get into sort of obviously where it comes from and what it is, what people are making nowadays with it. But I just from my earliest experience... I knew Dirty Shirley as very simply, I want a Shirley Temple, but I want you to add spirit to it. And that just meant, I want 7-Up with some grenadine, and I'll tell you the base spirit. So somebody wants a Dirty Shirley, it's like, okay, what, vodka, tequila, rum, what kind of Dirty Shirley do you want?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really, I will also say that usually had a step in there where I would ask to see their ID, because this is not... a normal order. It's somebody that wants
sure.
to drink but doesn't want to taste the alcohol. It's like, okay, that's fine, but I need to see your ID again. And that so it's been a phrase that's been used in cocktail bars for a while now, I'd say, you know, since for as long as there's been a Shirley Temple, which is of course a cocktail this is a alcoholic riff on, there's probably been a reference to a Dirty Shirley. But it's only in this, I think, this year that we've got a concrete idea of what it is. But before we get into that, we should talk about the cocktail it originated from. Or not the cocktail so much as the mocktail.
Yeah. Yeah, that would probably be the basis of it. How did we get the Shirley Temple?
Well, Shirley Temple, the drink, of course, is named after the beloved young American actress Shirley Temple, who was born in 1928. you know, famous in like the 30s and 40s, was sort of most acclaimed as being a child star.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was started performing at the age of 3 and was internationally known by the age of 5.
Yeah. Yeah, she started out in a series of educational movies that she got hired to do for $150 a week. And that was big money in them days. And
I mean, these days it still sounds not so bad. So,
and so she did those educational things, and one of the big movie producers saw her in that and said, "I'm going to make her a star." And she did like 29 movies between the ages of 3 and 10. Can you imagine that? That's just 7 years, and you did 29 movies. So that's multiple movies per year.
Well, I mean, to be that young, some of the, like, I don't know, there's a whole set, like, section in her Wikipedia about, like, myths and rumors about her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people thought that she was either, like, older than she said she was.
Yeah, they said she was a 30-year-old small person.
Yeah, or that, like, I mean, or her curls were fake, which led to people trying to grab onto her hair when they'd see her in public and try to pull it off of her.
Yeah, they said that her teeth, they never saw her lose teeth.
Yeah.
So she couldn't be a real youngster because she would have lost teeth. But what they didn't know was they were making, you know, basically bridges or whatever to fill in where she'd lose her teeth because they didn't want her to have missing teeth on screen, which makes perfect sense for Hollywood.
Yeah, she was just forced to wear
yeah.
the bridges. Not surprising, I feel like, nowadays as we know more about the entertainment industry, but definitely like a lot of unfair pressure on a small child at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of any age.
Well, I think about Cooper. Cooper's 4.
Yeah.
And you try to get her to do these kind of things, that'd be wild.
Well, I mean, Cooper's a whole other... I don't think Cooper would stand for it.
No, Cooper wouldn't.
you try to see if Cooper's curls are real. You're going to lose your own curls.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She'll straighten you out real fast.
But, yeah, so Shirley Temple, long and illustrious career, and then eventually worked in politics, right? She was an American ambassador for a couple mm-hmm. different presidents, right?
Yeah, she dropped out of acting by the time she was in her early 20s. And I think it's a fate that befalls a lot of them. You're a cute kid, and it's not that you're not an attractive adult as well, but it's just not the same thing as when you're a child actor and then grow up. Some make that conversion, some don't. Like Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell was a child actor and then made the transition to a full adult actor. But most kind of flame out, you know, when they start out there.
Well, somewhere along her career, this association with the Shirley Temple drink took place. Now, I think it's worth noting, before we get into any origin stories, Shirley Temple herself has denied any involvement in its creation. She was not there. Somebody just took her name and slapped it on a mocktail, and that was it. But that doesn't mean we don't have multiple bartenders competing for fanciful stories for who made it first.
Mm-hmm.
As is always the case.
Always.
So you've got two different, like, the most stated origin stories. They both take place around Hollywood in, like, the late 30s. One is the Brown Derby, which is well known for its cocktails at the time. Mm-hmm. The other one, maybe the more commonly believed one, is Chasen's, which was perhaps a spot she visited more often. Mm-hmm. And so the story goes, a very young Shirley Temple was there with a bunch of adults, and they were all having fancy cocktails, and she wanted something that also felt fancy, but obviously couldn't be alcohol because she was very young, and so they made her a mixture of grenadine and ginger ale and called it a Shirley Temple, and that was served to her, and that was her go-to drink. As mm-hmm. I said, once again, she has denied this ever happened, but who knows?
She actually says she hates Shirley Temples. They're way too sweet, and she doesn't like them at all.
Well, and that's interesting, because, you know, I want to talk a bit, like, about this, the idea that we now have this, you know, popular cocktail version of a mocktail. That's wild. But in origin, when we're talking, like, 30s and 40s, I think the Shirley Temple that you would have gotten then would be very different from the Shirley Temple you would get now and that you would have gotten, say, the past 20 years. Because mm-hmm. the... the ingredients we had behind a cocktail bar have changed a lot in that time. So I do believe her that regardless of how it's made, it would have been a very sweet drink, but I do think it would have been less sweet when she was consuming it. So
yeah, well, I would think, because a lot of times nowadays it's made more with a Sprite or 7-Up, and that seems sweeter than like a ginger ale or something.
Yes, but also what do you think of when you think grenadine flavor wise? You know grenadine. What is the flavor of grenadine?
Well, it's like a red syrupy, almost like a snow cone type topping or
it
something.
Tastes like red. Like
yeah.
Maybe like cherry, like maraschino, kind of, but like...
Yeah, it's just a red sweetness is all I get. I don't really get a flavor. Yeah,
that's fair, and that is what most grenadine is today when you buy it like in the pre-made bottles. But in its origin, and grenadine, it's a common cocktail ingredient. You get it in like call recipes back to like the late 1800s. But... it's hard to trace the exact history of it as far as when it originated, although it probably is French in origin. The term grenadine gives us some information about how it should be made. So grenadine comes from the French grenade, which means pomegranate.
It's made from pomegranates.
It was originally a pomegranate syrup. And the first recipes we have, like, recorded that include grenadine come from French recipe books in, like, the late 1800s. So it was around. It was being made then. Obviously, it made its way around the world from there. That original recipe, and really what, like, now bars that make their own grenadine, what you find is it's pomegranate juice. It's usually pomegranate molasses, which is, like, a reduced pomegranate juice that's sort of allowed to cook and caramelize mm-hmm. and get some sort of roasty notes to it. Orange blossom water, so you get some floral notes, and then sugar. So you get this very complex flavor profile of tart, earthy, floral, and sweet. Versus the red stuff, which is just sweet
sugar. Yeah.
So I think a Shirley Temple made in the era of Shirley Temple with, say, like a nice dry spicy ginger ale and a proper grenadine would have been very different from what you get, I don't know, like in the 90s walking into a bar and asking for a Shirley Temple, where you would have gotten Sprite or 7-Up with some roses grenadine on top and some maraschino cherries thrown in it.
And maybe a couple of scoops of sugar for good measure.
Maybe, yeah.
Just to make sure.
Yeah. There was a bottled version of a Shirley Temple that was trying to go to market in 1988. That Shirley Temple actually brought a lawsuit against it and won against them using her name because she really did not want to be associated with it.
Don't put my name on that bottle. I'll sue your ass.
Although there was, so predating the Dirty Shirley, there was another alcoholic Shirley Temple that became sort of not as popular as the Dirty Shirley today, but was, I guess, well enough to be somewhat of a call drink, and that was the Shirley Temple Black, and that was her married name.
Mm-hmm.
So she married a man whose last name was Black. And that was, it was ginger beer, so we're going back to the ginger, but we're using ginger beer, and it was rum. Makes sense. Ginger beer, rum, grenadine. That all makes sense as a drink build. Probably a good squeeze of lime in there. So there was an era where you could have ordered a Shirley Temple Black and gotten something akin to an alcoholic Shirley Temple.
I think that's clever since that was her married name.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, and you know, you like, you have dark rums that would make the coloring. But to get back to the cocktail of the summer, where, and I'm saying this as somebody that's kind of been out of touch from the bar industry for now 3 years. I'm back in working in a bar now, and it's people order it, and I don't. Where did it? How is this thing again?
Who started this madness?
Who did it?
Who did it?
Who did it?
Who done it?
I feel like part of it actually is explained by last year's fixation on the espresso martini, in that I think we're very clearly having a reaction to the very complicated high brow of cocktails that we've been doing for the last like decade and a half now. where people are kind of going, yeah, but I want something simple that tastes good. Well, I see people order it, and I think that part of the reason that we see this popular now is actually explained by last year's fixation on the espresso martini, and that is that we're kind of over, as a culture, the very complicated, very austere, very highbrow cocktailing that has been very popular in the past two decades at this point. And we're talking about the 90s, the early 2000s, the origin point for the cocktail revival. Now we're in 2022. Like, maybe we're a little exhausted about things that are taken so seriously that we're sort of rebounding to stuff that is just a little bit simpler and tastes good.
Post-pandemic people just want to have fun.
Well, I do think there's a part of it where it's like, you know, like, I honestly, and I mean also, it's as people's palates develop, like, I'm even at the point where I would always rather have a well-made, proper whiskey sour margarita than something that has, like, it's a margarita, but it's deconstructed, reconstructed, has 5 extra ingredients and 2 different rims, and it's smoked, and it's going to take me 20 minutes to prepare, and it's going to cost you $25. I'm like, no, I just would rather have a margarita. I think that we've had a little bit of, like, a reaction to the incredibly complex cocktail landscape we've had over the last couple decades. It's a natural thing. We've seen it in the past, right? We saw it in the,
yeah,
in the 60s and 70s. We saw it, you know, in response to what brought on the downfall of cocktail culture in America before. We're kind of seeing the same thing. I hope it's not as severe, but it makes sense that we're kind of reverting to simple, almost childish drinks.
Yeah, why not? You know, everything goes in cycles. It's just like fashion, you know, that goes in cycle. And I'm sure that drinking and drinking habits, drinking culture, it all goes in cycles as well.
Well, I hope we don't lose the territory we've regained, though. And by that, I would like to propose, like, a modest proposal. I think there's a way to enjoy a Dirty Shirley that actually would probably be a very good cocktail that has a hand in traditional cocktail structure, but is also not pretentious in any way and lets you enjoy the fact that it's sweet and refreshing and good. And that really is with the grenadine we talked about, like, you make some proper grenadine, you put some good, not too sweet, nice and tart and floral grenadine, and a little bit of, like, good ginger ale. Like, get some, there's so many nice ginger ales on the market now. A nice, like, 3/4 pour of, like, lime juice and spirit of your choosing. If you want vodka, that's fine. If you want to do, you know, I might, with the flavors there, I think actually a white rum would taste really nicely. Maybe tequila, maybe gin, but, you know, whatever your spirit is. You could make a very good cocktail out of this and not necessarily...
So it's a dignified Dirty Shirley.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's like, yeah, the elements there, the flavors that are there make sense together. How you choose to do it, it doesn't need to be expensive to be good. And maybe that's what I hope we're getting back to. That's what I would like to think we return to in cocktailing. Like, it doesn't have to be expensive or complicated to be good. You can still have well-made ingredients that respect the history of bartending. You don't need to revert to syrups that are all artificially made and artificially colored. It could just be good without being expensive or pretentious. Yeah. That's the sweet spot. The not-too sweet spot.
Well, and people aren't going back to it and drinking them like they're making themselves. That's obviously because they taste good. I mean, otherwise, why would you spend any money? Even if it's less money, you wouldn't spend any money if it's a bad drink.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a good, that's an obvious end, because I have wondered, watching, like, from a distance, like, where is the end point to this? Like, how complex and weird can we make an old-fashioned before we all agree, you know what the best version of this was? The first one. Or the one that has the most care to it. Here's a good whiskey. Here's a well-made syrup. Here's some quality bitters. I know what I'm doing, and I took my time with it. That's always going to be better than this is, you know, smoked and infused and all sorts of weird stuff. I don't think it's... some people I've seen, like, I've seen bartenders that I follow on social media be very upset about the dawn of the Dirty Shirley. It's like, oh no, it's the beginning of the end. We're all going back to bright blue cocktails and bullshit. It's like, no, I think we can redirect this. Maybe people just want simple things that are made well. That's fine.
A good Dirty Shirley doesn't have to be the dirtiest Shirley of all.
Well, and I'm excited to try to play around with the Dirty Shirley at my home bar, which I think starts with homemade grenadine. So I think, you know, finding it. Then there are so many good recipes for grenadine out there, but it is really simple. Anything that's like more than four ingredients is lying to you. It does not need to be that complex. You can do pretty good with pomegranate juice, sugar, and some orange blossom water. Getting some pomegranate molasses adds another layer that I would recommend, but even just those first three, you're basically making a simple syrup where your liquid element is pomegranate juice instead of water.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Very easy to make, not hard, not expensive, and some well-made homemade grenadine on top of just some nice simple ginger ale or ginger beer with a good amount of citrus and whatever spirit you want. That's a good drink. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, we might have to try one of those sometime.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for some good grenadine, not just the roses, but look, see if they've got actual bottles of real grenadine.
I think you should make some, Dad.
Oh, you think I should make some? I'm not a very good maker. I make simple syrup. I know how to do that.
Okay, well, if you can make simple syrup, you can make grenadine. It is not different. And like I said, like pomegranate molasses is sort of the ingredient that's a little harder to find. It's not that hard. You can get it on Amazon. I get it at there's an Indian market in Midtown that I go to. But you don't need it because all it is reduced pomegranate juice to the point that it's like a syrup. You can literally, I will tell you that a simple, quickly made grenadine is better than whatever one you would buy in the store.
Huh.
If you just get some pomegranate juice, which is easy to find, like the palm bottles, you can use those. I've used those.
Yeah,
just white sugar and then orange blossom water, which is pretty easy to find.
Okay,
I've even used rose water in a pinch. But yeah, gives you a much much better idea of what grenadine should taste like than anything you can probably find in a bottle.
Well, maybe we'll give that a try.
Yeah. And if you are enjoying a summer of Dirty Shirley's, good. Enjoy yourself.
Don't make sure you clarify if you tell other people about it. Hey, I had a Dirty Shirley last night. You did what?
It does sound like it's a weird reference to something, but it's just a perfectly fine drink.
Well, there's that TV show out not too long. Well, and a podcast, Dirty John, wasn't it?
I don't know what you're referencing.
It was a podcast and a movie. It was a guy that was, you know, he wasn't who he said he was, and he was grifting some lady or something like that, and evidently he had done it to several others. It was based on a true story. Or it was a true story, I guess. And
I guess if you wanted to make a riff on a Dirty Shirley, call it something else. Maybe the alcoholic version of a Rob Roy.
Yeah.
Dirty John.
Is a Dirty John.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, you should, I don't know, try that out. But make your own grenadine. If you take nothing else from this episode, make your own grenadine.
Make your own grenadine.
So easy. You can make your own Dirty Shirley's. You can make your own Jack Rose's. You can put it in any cocktail that, Singapore Sling, we put it in there. Any cocktail that requires grenadine is going to be better with homemade grenadine, and it's so easy. It's so easy to make. I didn't mention this, but I want to. Some people have a problem with when you make fresh grenadine, the color sometimes goes off. Even though it looks good in red, when you add other ingredients to it, it shifts to sort of a brown. I've gotten around this in the past with a little bit of hibiscus, like a tea bag of hibiscus, because it gives you a good bright red color, and it just sort of backs up that floral quality of the orange blossom water, gives you a little bit more bitterness, but if anything, it makes it a more complex syrup, which is nice. So that's my tip.
Add some hibiscus.
Pro tip, just a hibiscus tea bag into your grenadine, or just follow any recipe online. There are lots. There you go. All right.
All right. Well, now you can have a dirty Shirley or a regular Shirley, or at least you got fresh grenadine to use in any grenadine drink that you make.
That's true. Yeah, and that's also nice for those of you that are non-drinkers, or, you know, you want to make something that you can share with your kids. Homemade grenadine does not require alcohol in any sense. It's just a great, really good grenadine with soda is a great, just house-made Italian soda kind of build.
Unless you add grain alcohol to it, then it probably changes it.
Don't do that to your kids. That's just for the adults. That puts a dirty in Shirley.
It might make them more cooperative.
We do not support or endorse or okay the consumption of alcohol for people under the age of 21 here on Meet the Boozecast.
Absolutely. What Taylor said.
Hey, if you want to find us on the internet or support us, you can do that in lots of ways. We have a Patreon. Your donations, those are lovely patrons. You help make this show happen, and you get rewards and extra bonus content. Rewards are coming out this month. I'm a little behind on them. I'm going to own that and apologize, but they are coming out this month. So check your mailboxes for those. You've got stickers and coasters on the way. And if you are curious about joining our Patreon, well, if you joined right now, you could get in on those. So, hey, it's a great time to join. If you want to find us and contact us, you can do that at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. We are on Twitter and Instagram at neatboozecast. And if you want to talk about Shirley Temples, you can do that. Where can you do that, Dad?
At Meet the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
That's where you go. All right. Well, hey, thank you. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I learned more than I knew before.
Thank you all for joining us. I have been Taylor Smurl.
I have been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Well, even though Shirley Temple is no longer with us, we could make a drink that she would be proud of and like.
I wasn't sure if her need to, like, separate herself out of if she wasn't a drinker, but then it wasn't an alcoholic to begin. I don't know.
Maybe she just resented people using her name or likeness because she kind of felt used as a child.
I could ask her.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll call it something else. I don't know.
All right, we'll call it a Taylor Temple.
No, thank you.